So Steve just mentioned we're searching for a pastor, and when we started putting together the list of speakers, I was asked to speak sometime over the summer, and I reluctantly agreed, figuring it would fall while most people were on vacation, or at least sleeping in on a lazy summer Sunday morning. Then they asked me to switch dates to October, and I enthusiastically said yes. This time around, I was hoping that they would have hired the new person by now, or at least asked me to give up my weekend for a candidate to speak, but nope. None of that happened, so here I am, sandwiched in between two professional pastors. One, a favorite friend of Imago, and one, a nationally known author and worship leader. I asked Potter to tank it last week, but he didn't. I thought about his talk for days after that, circled around in my head that thought of being open. There are two things I know for sure about today. I'm really, really nervous. I speak in front of people. I'm not even really that nervous about that. I'm really nervous about wearing the mic. It feels like it's really important. And I will cry. I mean, it's a foregone conclusion. Even it really doesn't matter what I'm speaking on. That would have been something that happened. I cry most Sundays, so just wanted everyone to be, you know, not shocked about that. So as I prepare to speak to you today, I'm going to ask first that you would join me in prayer. This is a very personal story for me and maybe for many people out here. So I need to start with a prayer and just ask that you be in prayer with me. God, we welcome you. We acknowledge, Holy Spirit, that you are here. We worship you, and we thank you that every part of our stories you are going to use to restore and redeem the world, to bring hope in the midst of pain. So we honor and recognize you as the one who sustains us, both in the midst of our pain and brokenness and in the midst of our laughter and joy. Amen. So in true Imago fashion, things around here are sometimes organic. So when I was given my time slot over the summer, I was told I would be speaking on hospitality. And then earlier this week, Christina messaged me and asked me if I could speak on uncertainty. And I messaged her back and told her, I thought I could speak on uncertainty, but I wasn't sure. Then she messaged me and said that the formation team had decided that she was wrong, that didn't start till next week. So they said I could speak on whatever I wanted to speak on. But by then, this had become something, and I couldn't let it go. So this could go one of two ways. The formation team is going to be really upset with me when I totally destroy this topic, or I will be a great setup for the people that are on the subject, the real work on the subject that is to come. Since I put this talk together knowing others would come after me and they would probably define uncertainty and most definitely read Bible passages about it, I decided to tell you how uncertainty became a gift in my spiritual journey. I grew up in church because it was a thing people did. And doing the things people did, especially the right things, was what my family was good at. But my faith was very shallow. I didn't know God really meant something deep and personal. My faith was more like a belief in something universal. Like everyone believes in God, so I do too. It definitely wasn't the kind of faith for when the rubber meets the road. It was also a ton of rules to follow. So like many college students and young adults, I turned my back on my faith in college. I wasn't antagonistic about it. I didn't try to convince people that it wasn't real. In fact, I probably still believed in God. My faith just was not an integrated part of my life, and it felt like I just didn't need it. Fast forward a few years, and there came a time when I did need it, so I picked up my faith, and I began the process of spiritual growth. I was hungry for the certainty that my early 20s hadn't provided me. I began to study. I learned the word systematic theology for the first time, and I loved it. I read books and devoured as many facts about the Bible and my belief in God as I could cram into my head. I took notes in church like it was my job. The world seemed more certain to me than to. And for many years, I attended high certainty churches. Now, I didn't know that's what they were. Churches that hold a high certainty view don't call themselves that. They talk about inerrancy, truth, words like that. It wasn't until I found Imago Dei I even heard the term high certainty church. Since finding this group of people, Imago Dei has become my sanctuary, my safe place. Every time something has happened in the world that felt hard or scary, I could not wait to get to this place on Sunday morning and be with the people who had become my home. We have been through some hard things, friends, and there is more to come. Let's face it, there is a ton of uncertainty in the world right now. If you've been paying any kind of attention the last few weeks, if you've been on any social media like Facebook, Twitter, watched or listened to any news, or read any news article, you heard what everyone is talking about. You may have seen a picture like this. It's a slide that's been going around. The story behind it is a college professor drew a line down the center of a board and asked the students in his class, the men on one side and the women on the other, what they do to keep themselves safe from sexual assault. Sexual assault is just one thing in the world that can make us feel uncertain. There are many pictures or many slides that I could have used. But today I will talk about this topic. So just for a way of possible trigger warnings, I'm going to talk to you about a couple of personal experiences on this topic. I will try to keep my comments vague and be mindful of my vocabulary due to the various ages of children in the audience and my sensitivity to those who have experienced similar and much worse circumstances than my own. It is also important to note, I think, that I do not believe that anyone is beyond the love and forgiveness of Jesus. Even people who have victimized others. But I won't be speaking from their perspective. So about now, some of you are thinking, wait, did she just pull a bait and switch on us? Is this the first message she started? Can't you just go back to talking about hospitality? I mean, we could talk about meal trains and share chocolate chip cookie recipes and we would all feel better. There it is. That feeling, that uncertainty about what I am about to say. It's making some of you uncomfortable. A few moments ago, I told you I would be talking about what a gift uncertainty could be. And I promise for me, these two topics go hand in hand. During our time at one of the churches we attended prior to Imago, evidence was brought to light of a fellow churchgoer's sexual indiscretion with a minor. This was a prominent person in a position of authority over teens. It was devastating news. The next Sunday, following the evidence coming out, we went to church. The adult who had been accused was there. People were gathered around him. People were crying and hugging him. It was not at all what I had expected. The next Sunday, we went back to worship service, and this time around, the man was not there. I was curious, but soon found out why. Our pastor stood to speak and told us that there were people praying for him all over the country in that very moment because this was the hardest sermon he had ever had to give. Then, with all the certainty I had ever seen a person have, he told us that as a church, we were going to stand by that man. That we all needed to feel the same way. That we all needed to be on the same page. He made excuses. He rationalized this behavior and said he believed the allegations could not be true due to how upset and contrite our fellow church member was. I was frozen in my pew. My heart raced, my stomach churned. Some of you may have felt those things today. I scribbled notes ferociously as he spoke. I knew I could not be silent, and I was angry. After church, I told him I needed to talk to him, and he needed to sit down, as it was going to take a while. I led with, "I am so angry, because I need to tell you something, and I'm mad that you made the decision for me when to tell my story. And I did not want to tell it today, and that makes me angry." Every person's story is their own, and they get to decide when and how to tell it, and to be outed by somebody else's actions, whether it be 5 years or 35 years or a lifetime, doesn't matter. Then I told him my story. This is my story. I was a little girl in a small town. There are many, many churches there. When I was growing up, we used to say there was a gas station and a church on just about every corner. One of them was certain, just like that pastor was certain a few years ago, and it changed the trajectory of the life of some children my age. When I was 7, one of the churches in town decided they were going to rehabilitate and help a convicted child sex offender. Although that's not the label they gave him in the early 70s. They moved him to town and gave him a place to live, and I'm sure with all sincerity, prayed for his healing. One day, I don't remember what day of the week or the month exactly. I can infer from my memories that it was mid-spring, by the deep green grass and huge dandelions that were growing. I can guess it was Saturday because my mother was home and she never missed a day of work, but I can't be sure. But other details, like the man's face or the smell of alcohol on his breath or his large nose, I will never forget. That's how trauma works. I asked my mom if I could walk 2 blocks and around the corner to my best friend's house, and I bounded out the back door. But my friend wasn't home, and I turned to head back. I got distracted by these enormous dandelions growing in a ditch and stopped to pick some. A little boy, he was about 4, came out of his house and joined me. Soon, a man walked by. I don't remember if he spoke. We continued gathering handfuls of dandelion stems. The man appeared again. He had circled the block. This time he spoke to the little boy. He paid the little boy a quarter to go home, and the younger boy disappeared behind the large bushes that circled his yard. He was too young to sound the alarm to his family inside. The man asked where I was going, and I said home and started in that direction, and he followed me. In the first block between my house and my friend's house sat the church that this man attended. The church so certain that they could fix this man. It was an old building, and the church also owned a half-block empty lot that was directly across the street from my house. He joined me walking and asked if I wanted to accompany him to the laundromat, a few blocks in the other direction. I said I'd have to ask my mom first and pointed out where I live just across the street. That's when the man changed directions and tactics and asked me to follow him back to the church. We sat on the church step. This man tried to entice me with the promise of money, but I would not leave the block I was on without my parents' permission. He asked me adult questions that I didn't even understand and repeated innocently later to the police, the lawyers, the judge. I was extremely lucky. I survived this encounter the way I did because someone saw us together and called my parents. And my mom, with all of her best parenting instincts intact, drove up and asked me if I wanted to go to the store. Sure, who doesn't want to go to the store? We circled the block, and the police met us in our driveway. I finished telling the pastor my story and told him, "You can't do this. You have no idea how I or other survivors of abuse can believe in God when things happen to them if the church so steadfastly defends a person you know did something like this." I could feel my world crumbling. I was sitting there watching this very sincere person listen to my story, and I realized I had never asked some questions. Why would God allow those church-going Christians to be so wrong about that man all those years ago? Why doesn't rescue come as victims pray while they are being attacked? And if the church was wrong about those things, what else were they wrong about? I started to feel like I was made up of building blocks that were crashing around me. Blocks with cute Sunday school pictures of Adam and Eve in the garden, or Noah's Ark with fuzzy animals walking in neat rows onto a ship. There were other blocks that made up who I am, woman, wife, mother. Some had easy answers like, "God never gives you more than you can handle." Some had backwards theology that told me that everything that ever went wrong in my life was because of the bad things I had done. Some blocks were easier to figure out as I picked them up, like one that said literal six-day creation. Okay, I don't think I ever believed that one, you know, science and all. But some were beliefs that I had held onto for so long that they seemed earth-shattering. And I didn't know what to do with my blocks, because to be in that space with those people, I needed all the same blocks as them. So for the sake of moving forward in the space I was in, mothering young children, I picked up most of them and I moved on, forming and reforming my tower. Fast forward to the time when we had just started coming to Imago. Again, my family was affected by sexual abuse. But this time it hit much closer to home. My world fell apart. If the last crumbling was like a block tower, it was more like a Jenga game, where I could pull out a block and look at it and place it back on the top of the tower. Or I could get rid of it if I wanted to, but the structure remained sound. But this time, this breaking was like some giant cosmic toddler had just smashed gleefully through and sent the block scattering in all directions. Only it wasn't a tower at all. It was me. And I could not pick up those blocks again. I just couldn't do it. So I picked up my blocks one at a time. I started with mother, because that was the most important in that moment. Wife, woman. Then it came time to pick up the blocks that dealt with God, and they seemed so heavy. So I picked up one. It said God. I started there. I still believed there was a God. I still believed God was benevolent. Then I picked up the block that said love. And some days, that was the only block I carried into this space on Sunday mornings. Just one block that said, God equals love. So began my journey of reorientation. That is how the journey goes for many people. They are oriented in time and space in a belief system that for some of us began way before we could read or write. Then something happens that shakes them up, that causes disequilibrium. It's usually a tragedy, personal or public. Mine involves sexual assault and abuse, but yours may be losing a job, a loved one dying, a car accident. Our stories are all different. We tend to run from the hard things in life. We don't like that disequilibrium, and we fight against it. But to embrace doubt, the uncertainty, to let go of all the things that we have been carrying can lead us into beauty. Wow, okay, so that was a lot. Let's all take a breath, at least me. As I prepared for today, it just didn't feel right to get up here and tell my story and not leave you with something that could benefit everyone. And I just kept coming back to these things. When the event comes and we feel that uncertain disequilibrium feeling, we need to name it. What is making me feel like this? And sometimes the naming it is the beginning. Just to say, just to acknowledge it, to say it, to take away its power. We need to question it. What is the lesson I'm supposed to be learning here? What is the core truth that's on that block? We need to learn from it. We also need to be aware of who is on the other side of our certainty and how it might be affecting them. It's okay to believe that you are right about something if you have tested it and proved it. But is your certainty damaging to others? Then ask yourself, is there something I need to let go of? Is there a block that I need to get rid of? Like many people, I find great comfort in the Psalms. I think our American way of doing Christianity is missing out on so much because we do not join each other in the lamenting, for there is healing in it. David experienced disequilibrium often. He cries out and laments and rails against God for the bad things around him, but he always comes back to one thing, love. This is Psalm 142 from the Message, and it was written at a time that David was spending in a cave. I cry out loudly to you, God. Loudly, I plead with God for mercy. I spill out all my complaints before him and spell out my troubles in detail. As I sink in despair, my spirit ebbing away, you know how I am feeling, know the danger I'm in, the traps hidden in my path. Look right, look left. There's not a soul who cares what happened. I'm up against it with no exit, bereft, left alone. I cry out, God, call out. You're my last chance, my only hope for life. Oh, listen, please listen. I've never been this low. Rescue me from those who are hunting me down. I'm no match for them. Get me out of this dungeon so I can thank you in public. Your people will form a circle around me and you'll bring me showers of blessing. You were those people around me in a circle. That's how I felt here. Safe in this place, with my fellow travelers on this journey. Sarah Bessie in Out of Sorts, which, by the way, is on my orientation, disorientation, reorientation reading list, if any of you are interested, says, some of my greatest wounds have come from church, and so my greatest healing happened here too. I love this place, this sanctuary, this home that let me carry my blocks around, and sometimes carried them for me. The place where questions are so much more important than the answers, where if I had only one block with me and that it said love on it, that was enough. And if I didn't have a block that day, that was okay too. A few months ago, I sat in my formation retreat, my last formation retreat for my two-year cohort. I was gonna do a commercial for formation, but Christina already did it. So absolutely, during this whole process, I gave myself the gift of that community, and it was perfect. My friend Dave Lynn spoke about certainty and uncertainty and the song From Now On from The Greatest Showman. I won't try to quote him because he's much more eloquent than I am, But I do remember the essence of what I said, what he said. He said he wanted something true, even if it was just one thing, like a stake in the ground to hold on to and live out from now on. I resonated with that so much because I had lived that experience. I have let go of everything to believe in the things I knew to be true. That there is love, and there is healing, and there is hope. I'm going to close now with that song. I know that there may be feelings I've stirred up here today, and I want to give some space to those. If you have things you need to let go of or hold on to today, I want you to take the next few minutes to allow yourself to do that. Maybe you are like me in the breaking apart, and you need to just hold on to your one block that says love. That can be where you start. So we're just going to sit here and listen to the song for a few minutes, and then Christina will come forward to lead us into our time of communion.
Will not be blinded by the light. From now on, what's waiting till tomorrow starts tonight? Tonight, let this promise in me start like an anthem in my heart. From now on.
Tonight, it starts tonight.
And let this promise hit.